Mark Caro, and welcome to episode 154 of Caro Pop, sponsored by Revolution Brewing. Our guest this week is a wonderful singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, who has two albums out this year, one by her band Phenome and a long-gestating solo one, Seema Cunningham. She's a fixture on the Chicago music scene, someone who's constantly collaborating with others, supporting artists, and stretching her boundaries. Cunningham has sung and played with Jeff Tweedy, Chance the Rapper, Richard Thompson, Waxahachie, Iron and Wine, and many others. But Cunningham's most notable collaboration has been with fellow singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Macy Stewart, her partner in Phenome. They aren't siblings, but their musical connection is so seemingly telepathic, their harmonies so beautiful, surprising, and distinct that they could be. Attended Chicago's Whitney Young Magnet High School, though Stewart first knew and played with Cunningham's younger brother, Liam, who now performs under the name Liam Kazar. Seema tells how she and Macy connected and formed their band in 2014. It was called Ohmme, O-H-M-M-E, and they released two justly acclaimed albums, Parts, in 2018. Fantasize Your Ghost in 2020. Some legal complications prompted them in 2022 to change the name to Phenome, F-I-N-O-M. Cunningham explains what happens as best as she can. The group's third album, this time as Phenome, came out earlier this year called Not God. It was produced by Jeff Tweedy and the group and presents the broadest palette yet of the duo's music. It veers from danceable electronic tracks such as the opener Haircut,
passing through a bit too late for the day to be here to go get to my dad's to get some food and stuff to do that day,
and Cyclops,
I was digging up to looking to her when the sun turned on in the sky. I felt shivers of shame on a monster arcane. I lowered my fist and extinguished the fire.
To the intense, open-hearted waltz of As You Are,
I long for empty afternoons bleeding from the knee.
To the anthemic, zeitgeist-capturing title track. Different filmmakers made videos in contrasting styles for each of those songs. In this conversation conducted at her kitchen table in Chicago's Logan Square neighborhood, Cunningham reflects on learning multiple instruments while growing up in a musical and artistic household. She also sings a bit of the first two songs she ever wrote as a precocious 11-year-old. You're gonna love the chorus of the one called Squeeze. She tells of how she and Stewart write together, figure out who's singing melody or harmony, and how they find those parts. She recounts their history with Jeff Tweedy and how he works as a producer. She discusses the difference between writing and performing with Phenome and working on her own. And she tells the story behind her new solo album, High Roller. She also explores the importance of community in all of this. Cunningham plays a major role in making that community so special. Please enjoy this Caro Pop conversation with Seema Cunningham.
And I want a new icon, I want a new icon, I want a new icon.
Hey, Seema, thanks for coming on Caro Pop. I appreciate it.
Yeah, happy to be here.
You have a solo record and a Phenome record out now. So what was like the order of those things? Like I saw something that the solo album was going to come out maybe in 2022. Was that done first or?
The solo album has been like a long time cooking. I think I've been like throwing out the number 10 years, but some of those songs are even older than that, and some of them are newer. I think it took me a really long time to sort of feel like I had like found the appropriate, we had found the appropriate treatment for those songs. They just, it's a collection of songs that means a lot to me. Like, some of them are songs that I wrote for people that are no longer with us, and And yeah, it's just sort of, it's kind of one of those things where it was hard not to be precious about it. But also coming to kind of the right moment of being like, actually, I feel so good about how these songs are sitting and living together. And this feels like the perfect time to get it out. I mean, it's been a big year, obviously, with putting Not God out, Phenom, which, you know, was a much more, you know, more recent record. We wrote that, we recorded it, and then we worked on putting it out relatively quickly. And that record feels so good and feels so alive. And I'm like about to go start touring that.
Right.
Which I'm really excited for, because those songs feel absolutely electric to play right now and like so invigorating in a way that I feel like I really needed. But then, yeah, putting out High Roller has also just been this really like beautiful foil to that record, I feel like also, and sort of letting me like share this very, I think, warm side of like my performance with people. A lot of people have like texted me or sent me messages and said that my album feels like a warm hug to them, and that was like exactly what I wanted it to feel like. So yeah, so it's been a wild year, but really fulfilling.
So were you recording these songs over many years, or did you just write them over many years?
No, I was recording them. Me and my husband, Dorian, who we've been collaborators for a really, really long time, and kind of dipping our toes into my solo record. You know, it's been, I have so many more songs than what is on High Roller. But I think finding, you know, trying to like really pull what I thought was the best grouping of them together, and, you know, also making peace with the fact that it's not all in like one, not all the songs are done in the same way. Like there's some songs that are very piano heavy. There's some songs that are kind of electric and loud and feel like full arrangements. And then there's some songs that are really, really stripped back acoustic. And I think for a while I was wrestling with like, is it okay to have all of those things on one album? And I ended up, we've been around the house listening to so many Nilsson records. And
oh yeah, yeah.
And I feel like listening to those records, that really like emboldened me to be like, yeah, absolutely. You can have, you know, you can have those kinds of dynamics on a record and it's totally fine. What's important is that it's a song, it's a record about the songs. So people have different like feelings about that. Some people really like a record that kind of like develops a language and then like stays in that language. So when you put it on, you feel like you're kind of like cruising through like one headspace and sound world, but that's just not really, I don't know. That's not really how I make records. I think the songs, whatever serves the song is the way that the record should be made to me. So,
I mean, the first song on it, Nothing, does all that. It starts off quiet and spare, and then it kind of builds up. So it sort of announces right off the bat, oh, we're going to be like shifting the scenery over the next 40 minutes.
Yeah. 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 I think that one kind of does sort of crack open that there's a lot of possibilities here.
There you go. Now, when you're writing these songs, are you thinking, oh, this is like definitely a me song and not a Phenom song?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's been interesting as like me and Macy have explored and come to understand like what is the voice of Phenom. And we have tried, you know, sometimes we put our finger on it, sometimes it changes. But I think that generally we feel like if it's a Phenom song, then both of us are able to like find a way to like wear the song, or that it feels like it inhabits the character of Phenom and can be kind of like a two-spirited song that, you know, coalesces into one. I know that sounds like a lot of...
No, that makes sense.
But I think there are certain songs that we play for each other, you know, because Macy also releases solo music that just feels so from one or the other of us. Like it's really just, it feels like it's a direct, you know, direct communication from like inside one or the other of us, that it feels like it would kind of betray the song to try and give it that double spirit. So right. I think that it's a little hard to like define, but you know, for example, though, I think me and Macy actually both have like written songs on our solo records about our uncles that have passed away. And I think that both of those songs would feel like not, it wouldn't, I don't know, it wouldn't feel right to put it in the Phenom world. The Phenom world feels a little bit more like an imaginative space or an imaginative character that we create together. And, you know, ultimately, like, I think it's nice to have different projects that can kind of wear different personas. You know, I really like, I think both me and Macy really like leaning into like our more piano or like kind of these real, I don't know, it's like Carole King on acid or something, you know, like sides of ourselves, and keeping Phenom as its own like experimental world.
Right.
Louder.
Like something like For Liam is a solo song.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really personal. It's your brother.
Yeah. It's my brother. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And he's on the record, but,
yeah, yeah. So. He's on there some, yeah. I mean, I wrote that. That's one of the oldest songs on the record. I wrote that in my early 20s about my brother. I think, you know, at that time when I wrote that, Liam and Macy actually were, you know, in a band together in high school. They were traveling all around the country as teenagers, which is like crazy in hindsight to think about. But I think I remember I was in college then, and I've always just like had this kind of like fierce protective feeling about my brother. And especially when he travels so much, especially, and you know, now he's still a professional musician. He's traveling all the time. And so I guess like that's something I think about a lot, but then obviously that song over the last 10 years has like, it still feels appropriate for it to be called For Liam, because that's where like, I feel like, you know, it's like that first feeling of like deep, like I care about this person so much. Like they feel like part of my soul. And for me, that was my sibling. But then obviously it's like, now I sing that song and I think about my child or
right.
my husband or, you know, yeah, just other people who I've developed these long relationships with. And I just like, can't imagine life without them.
Yeah. It's like sometimes things are complicated, but I take a bullet for you and give one too. Which is, you know,
yeah,
intense, but it's also like what, you know, that level of love is about.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of the, you know, I don't really know how deeply I was thinking about like, okay, really, what does this mean about my feelings about pacifism and violence? Obviously, I'm a nonviolent person, but I think everyone like kind of wanders off in their head sometimes and thinks about like, what would you do if the person you cared about the most in life was threatened? Like, how would you react? Would some animal come out of you? And
did you sit down and play it for him at some point, or perform it for him, or play him the recording?
Oh, he's heard it so many times now. I think he's like kind of, you know.
Well, like what was the first time though?
I don't know. It was honestly probably so long ago.
But you don't like you did you like put him in a corner and pull out your acoustic guitar and say, I wrote this song. It's called For Liam. You have to listen to
it. I'm sure it was at that point, like, you know, we're both adults now, and I think we're a little bit more like, you know, comfortable just being like, oh my God, you're my brother, you're my sibling, you're one of my best friends, and I have so much, you know, love. So, but I'm sure at that time, because Liam was probably like 18 and I was 21, I probably like played it for him in passing, and I was like, you know, it's called For Liam and it's enough too, but like, don't like, you know, just, I don't know, maybe
don't
like,
freak out,
don't freak out, don't be embarrassed, but I wrote the song about how much I love you.
Well, that's nice. Did you know, so when you were growing up, did you have like a musical household? Did you and Liam make music together? And did you guys play in the living room all the time and stuff?
Yeah, we had a musical household. Our dad is a musician, songwriter, a singer, and a guitar player. And he played in bands in the 80s. He had a band called Animal Farm, and now he still plays gigs. He usually has like a pretty regular standing gig at the Hungry Brain in Chicago. And actually where he's finishing up a little EP right now that we're helping him with. So, but, yeah, we grew up playing a lot of music. I am like very, first child, older daughter syndrome. I don't know, whatever the internet calls it, but, I was a big performer my whole life, took myself very seriously as a performer. I was in a choir, the Chicago Children's Choir, which is now called Uniting Voices. And there's so many videos of me just like so serious on stage, like, you know, performing my butt off. So I like was very kind of like determined to be a musician, like a rock star, I think was like from when I was a kid was something I was like, I just want to do that. I love performing for people. I love singing. I loved making up songs from when I was little. And our mom is a painter too. So we grew up in a very like, you know, creative, supporting artistic lifestyle. And also like seeing that being an artist is a job and is a career, and respecting that as like a real thing. So
you're in Chicago.
Yeah, we grew up in Chicago.
Which neighborhood?
I was born in Bridgeport. I lived there for first couple of years of my life, and then around when Liam was born, we moved up to Irving Park, like right off the Blue Line.
Oh, okay.
And then now we live in Logan Square. And
you and Liam went to Whitney Young.
We went to Whitney Young. Yeah, yeah. We had one fun year of overlap when I was a senior and he was a freshman, and we were on the Ultimate Frisbee team together. And
it's a feat in Chicago, and you and your sibling can go to the same school.
Yeah. I mean, I know now it's so like intense. It was intense back then, but, too, I guess like the whole, like getting into high school things, but it was super fun. I'm really glad we got to go to high school, together, because, you know, and I think that like further launched us. There was definitely like a period of time when I was in high school and he was in middle school when I think like we didn't really speak the same language.
Right.
And he was also discovering his musical penchants then and like starting his own bands. And I think like developing his own, obviously now he's, you know, he has his total own musical project and tours separately. And now actually we play together like in some ways more than when we were kids. Cause I think, you know, I had such my own ideas of how I could be a total control freak. So I'm glad that he kind of like, he was sort of like a little bit quieter, but also like he's way cooler than me. And
that age difference is just bigger when you're, especially like high school, junior high. I mean,
yeah,
you know, the difference between like a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old is just like,
yeah. Big. Well, and a 15-year-old girl, I was like, you know, acting like I was like 22 when he was like 12.
So did you have like instruments around the house? I mean, your dad's a musician. Did you like, was there a piano that you just started playing? Is that what you learned first?
Yeah. Yeah. Piano. I think I like tried Suzuki violin and that was not my jam. So yeah, piano. I took piano lessons and,
how old were you?
Six, I think. And it's funny. It was like such a battle with the piano with my parents, because I like one of the things about my musical whatever I guess talent is that I memorize things so quickly. Like if I hear a melody or hear a song, like I almost pretty instantly can at least memorize if not the melody but a lot of the words too. Like I just kind of have this really good, so I cheated a lot in learning piano and learning how to sight read, because I would always ask the teacher, I would be like, oh, can you like play me the song just so that I get the feel for it? And then I would pretend to sight read, but really actually I would just be playing it from memory.
Wow.
Or like by ear, which, you know, is a cool talent, but also really hinders your ability to force yourself to sight read. Like, Macy, who is like so much more, she, you know, went, studied the piano so much hard, and she actually has her own incredible ear training abilities, but she is so much better at sight reading music, obviously, and is like way levels above me because she, you know, really did the work. Whereas I kind of always played music and like learned techniques, but I just always like relied on instincts a lot in a right. way that kind of made me, you know.
How often do you need to sight read music though?
Now? No, not, no.
See, it's, there you go. I mean.
But it is it's a beautiful thing to know how to do.
Oh, sure.
Like I love being able to, I mean, right now I wish I was better. I wish I could sit down and really two-handed play like a classical piece. That's probably, you know, something that I want to get back into in the next 10, 15 years is really, you know, pulling back, even just to play the piano for yourself. It's like a really, or like pick up a piece of music and sing. I can do that. I can sing sight read pretty well, but my piano, my like hand eye reading coordination is bleh.
Right. But on the other hand, I would think that when you're playing with people or in a band, the ability to hear something and remember it and then play it back, that would be hugely valuable in totally. That context.
Yeah, no, I would say, on the whole, what my skill set is now is like, I can like jump into, you know, like, for example, a couple years ago, Tweety had these shows and my brother got COVID and we were playing these Tweety shows at the Metro. And like, I jumped in and played bass with like 48 hours notice. And that's just because like, I know all those songs and know how to intuitively like move through them. And
so you're a bassist too.
I am actually increasingly, I've gotten some pretty sweet bass gigs over the last couple of years and I want to do more. I got to play bass in Waxahachie for like a week, when their bass player had to step away and it was really awesome. Katie asked me to come play bass and sing with them and it was so much fun. And then, yeah, I got to play bass with Tweety a little, and I played bass on my brother's songs sometimes, and I love playing bass. I think it's like such a fun instrument, and I think it's like, it's kind of, yeah, it's my new hobby. I'm a bass player.
So, but you did piano first, and then did you teach yourself guitar? Did you take guitar lessons too?
My dad taught me all the open chords on guitar. I did not do guitar lessons. My dad just taught me the open chords. And I think it always, when I was like 12, so around when I learned to play, it felt like it was just a tool for me to start songwriting more. Like I was already writing songs on the piano, but I think I really wanted to like try accompanying myself on guitar. So I learned the open chords, and that was kind of like mostly what I did for, I guess, I don't know, 8, 10 years. Yeah, 10 years. And then when I was in my early 20s, that's kind of when me and Macy were like, do you want to like just pick up electric guitars and make a lot of noise and see what playing electric guitar feels like and sort of blindly find our way through this very fun instrument. So that's kind of, but yeah, guitar. And then I played oboe for 1 year, my senior year of high school.
Yeah. You even worked that into your albums.
No, but actually, there's going to be, if you're a fan of the oboe, you should definitely come to the Metro on November 2nd, because there's going to be
an oboe
moment that should not be missed. Ironically, even though like all of my extracurriculars in high school were, almost all of them were music related, I needed a music credit to graduate from high school. So I went to the band director and I was like, can I like play something in band so that, and he was like, yeah, actually I need a first chair oboe player next year.
First chair.
Yeah. First chair.
And that's like the one instrument you'd not played.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally different skill set than
I had never done a woodwind. Yeah. So he handed me an oboe over the summer. I got, a couple lessons. And then the next school year, I was the first chair oboe player, which means I played some of the things that I was supposed to play. A lot of the times I would lean over to the flute players who were actually good at their instruments and ask them to cover my butt. So,
wow. But still, I mean, first chair oboe when you've never played it before, that's a challenge.
I did all right. Yeah. I did all right. I really, you know, the moments where they really wanted the oboe to sing, I tried to focus on those parts, and then, you know, I would lean out sometimes. But all of that was because I could read music. He was like, well, you can read music. Here's an oboe. Figure it out.
That's funny. Do you remember the first song you ever wrote?
Yeah, I wrote, it's funny, I was talking about this the other day. I wrote this song called My Girls. And it's funny because in some ways I feel like it preluded like one of my favorite songwriting topics, which is friendship. So I wrote this song about like my best friends in grade school. And honestly, for most of my music career, a lot of my songs are about friendship. Yeah, I like don't write that many love songs. I have written them like love, like romantic, I guess, between right. me and a lover, but or observing love out in the world. But I love to write about, I guess, like, yeah, just how important and beautiful I think friendship is. And I had, you know, I was lucky enough to have some really like magical best friends when I was a little kid. I feel like the imagination that I got to live in with those friends was such a huge part of all my creative thinking for the rest of my life. Like it kind of like set the stage for me to feel like, you know, to just like look at the world and wonder. And so I feel like that so much of my songwriting comes back to that, comes back to like connection with people and how that can like open up, you know, beautiful ways to look at things around you.
So how old were you when you wrote My Girls?
I think I was 11.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
These are my girls.
Yeah.
We're a posse.
Yeah. It was actually like a really kind of like sentimental piano song. I remember I tried to learn to play it on guitar, but it has this like chromatic walk up and I couldn't get my fingers to, at that time, I just couldn't hold on to a guitar tightly enough to do this one chromatic walk up. So it was very much a piano song, but yeah, it just went just for my girls. And then I wrote another song called Squeeze shortly or like right around then. And that one, the chorus goes, I like the idea of like writing a really edgy song. The chorus goes, I hope someday you can grab reality by the balls and squeeze. So that was my first guitar song. Squeeze was my first.
You should play that for someone. You need to play it in a show. Have you played it?
Yeah, I play it like once in a while. It's good. I think the songwriting holds up and is like,
you're like 11-year-old singing about grabbing people by the balls.
Yeah. I think people thought like, I don't know if like, you know, at that point, if 11 or 12 year olds can still be considered precocious or just like ridiculous, but I think
precocious.
You can think it was, precocious. I think it was like very precocious then. And then as I got into high school, I kept playing the song. And then, you know, of course all the teenagers thought it was probably just funny that I was singing about squeezing balls. So
when you were writing these songs and still writing songs, would you sit at the piano and sort of figure it out, or would you like have something in your head before you even picked up the instrument?
I think it's sort of a combination. I've always kind of been like a songwriter, like kind of finding the melody and the words at the same time out of mush. Like, I feel like it's kind of like sculpting in that way that like you kind of have, you know, you have an idea and you have the tools, but it's kind of just a mound and you're kind of just playing with it and sort of feeling what it gives back to you. And then eventually if you start finding something, you like just keep going on that. And
right.
then the song kind of unravels out of that. Definitely. I'm like, I sang to myself a lot, like just out loud, and it was not always words, sometimes kind of Babel. You know, I used to love to like just kind of like play. I had friends either in, you know, sometimes with my parents or with friends in grade school or in high school. And we would like just play. And then I would kind of sing over that and kind of improvise until I was like, ooh, I found the melody. I found the chorus. And then, yeah, sometimes I'm kind of a burst songwriter. Like I don't write a song every day or even every week or even every month. It's like, I kind of like finally find a moment when I really feel like writing songs and they all come out really, really quickly. And that's pretty much been how I've done it for most of my life is like, I just kind of get like an inspiration streak and run with it for a while.
And is it just whenever the inspiration comes or is it when you know, oh, I have to write songs or I really should write songs for this project?
I mean, I think it started as like kind of whenever they would come. And then obviously as I started, like when Phenome first started, I had these songs and I was like, ooh, I want to like throw some of these songs towards the Phenome project, show them to Macy and see how they transform with the two of us. And then, yeah, I don't really know. I mean, definitely with Phenome, I've done more like, ooh, I want to write some songs like for Phenome and really, you know, get them done. But I think the solo stuff has kind of happened more just naturally when a song comes to me. And I'm so like, one of the things about this year and putting out two records is that I feel like I like finally have like my songwriting chakras are open again. Mm. Now that I like finally got these two really important records out, I suddenly feel like brimming with like words and melodies and ideas. And I kind of, now I'm just looking for the time to like dive into them, which obviously now my time is much more limited because I am very busy and I have a kid.
Right. A young kid.
Yeah. 1.5.
So do you sketch things out? Like, do you get ideas and then like sing it into a voice memo or write in a little notebook? Or do you just sort of wait and do it all when you have the time?
I wish, honestly, it is heartbreaking sometimes because there's definitely songs that have just like gone to the ether just because I didn't have time to like grab them within my, but yeah, voice memos. I try and voice memo. I'm not very good at journaling, but I do try and like write down just like words or little phenomena that I observe that I'm like, oh, I really want like that to go into a song. Like the other day I was at like the Storm King in upstate New York, the Storm King like outdoor sculpture park, and me and my kid were walking around and I like found this little seed pod and there was this really silky stuff inside of it that was kind of spilling out, and we just kind of spent like 20 minutes pulling the silk out of this pod and like watching it. Mm. And it was all like misty. And I was like, I had all these words that were just kind of like running at me while I was having that like sensory experience. So I tried to like write some of that down before, you know, before the experience left me so that I could hopefully revisit it and,
right,
you know,
recapture that emotion,
yeah,
too.
And channel it into a song. So,
Macy had been playing with your brother before she and you had sung, mm-hmm, together. Do you remember the first time you sang together?
Yeah. Her and my brother were playing together in Kizzy's Days and then Marrow. And around the time Marrow started, I think like I probably sang some songs with them, with that band. And I was also recording an EP of my solo stuff then. And I had Macy come and sing harmonies with me. I remember now, actually, I think it was 2014. Yeah. Around like 2013, 2014, me and Macy started like singing in different things together. Yeah, 2014, 15, 16, we were singing a little bit with Chance around then and Marrow and my stuff and a bunch of other people. We kind of just figured out that we were like really good at harmony singing together and,
right,
had a very like easy, intuitive way of just kind of jumping in on with anyone's, you know, song. And she's kind of has a mezzo soprano voice. I have like a pretty deep alto voice. So it sort of was like, just kind of felt like we were like puzzle pieces that could like fit into anyone's picture. And, you know, it's one of those things where you're just like, oh, we just have a total flow, singing together, working together, very different voices, but a lot of synchronicity. And yeah, and I mean, I just loved Macy's voice. Like, it's so incredible and so different than mine. But I feel like we also really love figuring out ways to make, to blend and then kind of grate. Like, we have, you know, sometimes we have different vibratos or we have different just timbres in our voice, or how we hold notes is different, or how we shape our mouth. So that, even just that, we can be singing the same note unison, but we can be kind of like finding a lot of like blending and then tension in pulling our voices apart like that. And I think that's, that is the voice of Phenom, is like kind of hearing how those waves, how those two voices like sit with each other and then against each other.
I also feel like, and I say this as sort of a more of an amateur listener, although I listen to a lot of stuff, but the harmonies you two are choosing to sing are not necessarily the harmonies that a lot of other people would choose. That there's, that they're really interesting kind of hypnotic ways that the two of you are singing kind of blends together. You know, sometimes it's a little dissonant, sometimes it just has these other kind of like, it's not always like this kind of like, you know, the sweet, you know, interval that everyone, you know, expects. And yeah, it's these other tones that are going on. And I'm wondering like how you sort of find what it is you're going to sing together and how that works.
Yeah. One of the really cool elements of, or one of the cool parts of me and Macy's, our musical history, is that because we have, you know, we have all of this different kind of music experience. Like, I grew up singing all different kinds of music, polyphonic, harmonic. And I also always attribute this to the fact that I was an alto. So I never, ever sang the melody in choirs. I always sang a counterpart or like a weird harmony. And, you know, Macy's just like understanding of tonality and how and where, you know, things or extensions can fit into a chord. I think that gives us so much freedom to kind of like expand beyond the bounds of like, you know, what might be more traditional or like harmonies based in like country music or something, or, right. Yeah, is that like both of us kind of have this knowledge that's like deeply implanted in our heads of like, yeah, you don't have to do it like that. And I think, I just think that comes from when people sing a lot, like have just been singing their whole lives. I am right now listening to the Roaches so much because I'm doing this Roaches
show. I was about to bring them up.
With Kelly Hogan and Nora O'Connor. And I mean, their harmonies are just like so incredible, counterintuitive. Yeah. I mean, God, there's so many words that you could, but anyway, some of the most impressive vocal songwriting and harmonizing that has ever existed. Right. And
right. Yeah. When I walked in, I noticed this, I saw the album Nerds, the Roaches album Nerds.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, and that's kind of like a sort of an interesting album too.
Yeah.
Sandwiched between the two Fripp ones, but yeah, the Roaches are so fantastic. And you and Macy have this, share this, even though you're not blood related like they are, but you know, but they have like, each one of them is sings like they're not all sopranos. I mean, Maggie's got that deep voice and Terry's kind of in the middle and Suzzy's up high, and they sound different, but they sound like sisters. And there's something about the way those voices blend that is just like so much more than the sum of the parts.
Yeah.
And I'd say that's true of you and Macy as well. And
yeah,
so I don't know if you've become sort of musical siblings, but it sounds
absolutely. I mean, at this point she is a sibling. She's like so deeply entwined with me and my brother and my husband. She's absolutely a member of my family. So, yeah, we are very interconnected, and yeah. And I think have also just like come to learn how to play off of each other, and I think also have appreciation, like in Phenom, you can hear on our records, there's moments when we're singing by ourselves.
Sure.
And I think that we think that that's like, that's such a beautiful contrast to like have, yeah, like these moments of like rich harmony or like, and then let one singular voice like say something very like, I don't know. It's just a cool dynamic to play with. And also, you know, we sing a lot with my brother too. And Liam, I would say is, you know, Liam is the most like kind of just going for it with harmonies, because he didn't spend that much time like harmony singing, but he has such a beautiful and like rich voice. So he usually just kind of finds his own way. And then, but in the same way with like the Roaches, I feel like, you know, then sometimes if like me, Macy and Liam are all singing together, it's like, you know, he'll come up with things that he's sort of like, I don't know, this is like what felt right to me. And then we will sing around that. And that, you know, makes it fun and interesting too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, when you and Macy are singing together, sometimes I'm like, I can't tell who's singing the melody or who's singing the harmony or which part is even which.
It's just, yeah.
It's just like this thing together that's its own creature that isn't like melody plus harmony. It's just the two of you singing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and how about like when you're writing, how does it work? Does one of you bring in something, or do you kind of sit in a room together and figure out things at the same time?
A little bit. I feel like usually most of a song we just like bring them to each other. I think just because of the nature of how songs are written, it's hard to like, you know, sit down and line by line kind of come up with something. But sometimes what will happen is, especially in like the last record or the last two records, we'll like, we do, for Phenom, we do a lot more like, we get in a room, we play with each other, we like come up with a groove or like have an idea, and then we really expand on it. And then maybe we'll go finish the song. Like, I think, so we've definitely like co-written, I would say, some choruses of Phenom songs together. We've done like a little bit of like verse writing together, but generally I think that we feel like it's best if it like one of us goes and like really makes a complete idea with the song. Because if you, I don't know, I think a lot of songwriters would agree with me. If you have to explain what the song is about before it's written, chances are you're probably going to write something that's too on the nose.
Right.
Whereas if the song kind of emerges just like from pure emotion, even if it like feels very pointedly about something, at the end of the day, it's not going to feel like you were like the words are like trying to be about this thing. And I think that is good songwriting practice. So I think, generally a lot, it's like either we bring each other pretty fully written songs, and then maybe we like add or develop a chorus together, or we like bring each other a groove, take it away separately, kind of chip away at it, and then bring it back together.
Curopop is supported by Revolution Brewing, Illinois' largest independent brewery. Revolution's great beers include the classic Anti-Hero IPA and the premium lager Cold Time. And now you can get DDH Colada Hero, a hazy double IPA laden with a classic swizzle of coconut and pineapple notes. DDH Colada Hero is lush and tropical, offering waves of sweet piña colada bliss. Crack a can and let the rush of island vibrancy whisk you away. God has some pretty groovy stuff on it, some kind of like dancey things like Haircut or Cyclops. Is that sort of a conscious thing, like, hey, let's you know, let's get a little bit of that, you know, disco beat going behind what we do? Or is it more that's just how the songs came out?
That is just how the songs came out. I think
it's fun. I mean, I really enjoy it. I just
yeah
And seeing you guys doing it live when you did it at the Hideout was really fun.
Yeah.
Because it was like, and so that Metro show is going to be great because this is like, is you're just playing it live and that's.
Yeah. The Not God is so much fun to play live. Like we are just having so much fun playing it. And I think in a way that it's like, you know, we're like, oh, let's just play the whole record. Like, yeah, if we get some old songs in, cool, whatever. But we just want to play the new album. Yeah, I don't know. We did not like set out to like, oh, we need a dancey song on the record. I think, you know, I think with Jeff too, it's just about, I don't know, what like best serves the song? What is the best way to, I think if we, again, if we had really wanted the record to all sound really, you know, totally similar and like in the same world, then we would have done it differently. But I think, you know, me, Macy, and Jeff got in the studio and we were like, all right, what feels good with this song? You know, like, let's, where does it lead us? I think, yeah, Cyclops turned into this total like disco dance one. And Haircut, you know, Macy wrote Haircut kind of like deep pandemic. Her and Namdi were trading like kind of these song, like AI generated song lyrics and then turning them into full songs. So Haircut came out of that. And then we, yeah. And then I heard it and I was like, I love that song. I want to play it. I think it'd be a really fun Phenome song. Like I'd love to, you know, find my spot in it. And so we did.
You got a fun video too.
Yeah. Oh my God. Making the videos, we call it the cinematic universe of Phenome. Was so much fun and really glad we did that. Cause it really like, you know, made the world of who was part of that record, like so much bigger.
And like, I think what, four different filmmakers, right? Four yeah. different styles. I mean, you know, Haircut is this, what is it? Sort of like this old sort of vintage French
yeah.
film thing going on. But then As You Are has this kind of beautiful 16 millimeter or Super 8. I don't know what
yeah.
it is. It's like, it's, you know, and just kind of this, you know, it's all about movement and, you know, it's, mm-hmm. they're very different, but they serve the songs in their own way really well.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we got to do Not God was the one we shot the earliest. Cause I had this idea. I was like, Not God, I want to be a cult leader and I want Macy to be the person that sees through the cult and brings it down. And then also I think at the time conceptually I was like, well, it'd be funny if I was a really pregnant cult leader, or it'd be cool. And so we got it right in the nick of time. I was 9.5 months pregnant.
9.5?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was so pregnant when we shot that music video. I had to like, you know, it was like a whole thing. I had to like be like lying down for most of the day and then they would bring me out and I would like do my acting and then I would go lie down and keep napping. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's funny. I noticed, by the way, that on High Roller, the last song is Adonai, which yeah. is the Hebrew word for God. Yeah. And then your Phenome record is Not God. So yeah. you got a little yin and yang going on there.
You know, for someone who's not, you know, admittedly not really a believer, I still think it's really fascinating to think about the character God, I guess, and like the role, the how it plays in people's life and the role it plays in people's life. So,
yeah. Well, we were just talking about Joan Osborne in our emails too, whose biggest hit was a God hit. And there aren't yep. that many God hits.
Maybe hit. That's where it all started. What if God was one of us?
There you go.
That was like my original song that I would sing for people. So that must be it. But cause I sing about God in at least four different songs that I've written. I don't know.
There you go.
When I was a little kid, I was really jealous of my friends that went to church or like had, you know, or went to temple or had God in their life. And so like when I was like 7, I tried to convince my parents, I was like, I want to start going to church. And I got gold cross earrings and I just kind of was so intrigued by the rituals of belief. And, but then George Bush got elected president and that really colored my relationship with religion for a lot of my I would say my angsty.
Which Bush, the first or second? Second, right?
W. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe
you're pretty young with the first, but you're precocious. So I just figured I better ask.
Yeah, no, I wasn't clued in when I was 1 year old to the, but
you weren't that precocious.
No, but like George W. got elected when I was 11. And I was a pretty politically engaged kid, even at that age. I cared a lot about politics then, and did for, I mean, I still do very much so, but I did for like all of my elementary school and high school, and felt really pissed off about evangelicalism taking over our country.
Well, I'm sure that issue's just totally gone away now.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. Thank God that was in the past.
So to go back to you, you're in the studio with Jeff Tweedy. You're recording at The Loft. You've obviously worked with him a lot. You've played mm-hmm. with him on stage and, you know, you recorded with him. Mm-hmm. What role does he play as producer with you?
Yeah. Jeff, I mean, very, very lucky that someone who was such a like a formative artist of my young musical brain has now become like a full-blown mentor to us. And, you know, getting to play his music and work on his records with him and play in his band and travel with him. And I mean, it's very, very, I feel so lucky to be a part of his world, and, you know, that he loves and respects us and loves our music and wants to help like bloom it and capture it in the most, you know, interesting and authentic way. Like, yeah, there's a real like mutual friendship there that I'm grateful for. And yeah, I think, I mean, I really loved Jeff. We brought him all these songs and he helped us kind of, I would say push them in like some cool arrangement directions. Some of them were very like mantra, kind of like circular chords repeated over and over again, which I love to do. But he helped us kind of like reshift. If you can hear it, if you're a music nerd or not a music nerd, but you can really hear it on Not God, Dirt and Naked, I think are the kind of the ones that I remember him. We like, he was like, what if you changed this? Like there's, speaking of interesting harmonies, like I feel like on Dirt, there's some really like weird open harmonies, or we're singing the same thing, but over totally different chords in like different verses. Or like the end of Naked is like a total, it's a journey. Like I would say if, you know, yeah, it's a fun one to like, it took us a while to like relearn what we did there. Like in the studio, I remember we kind of were like, oh, well, what if we, can we go there from there? And then we obviously needed to figure out how to like perform it, so it felt intuitive. So it didn't feel like we were like jumping through hoops to get to the next chord, you know, but yeah, then when, you know, when it finished and we were like, okay, now we got to play the record. We had to really like go back and like relearn what we did.
How did we do that?
Yeah. How did we do that? And yeah, that was fun. So that was, you know, something that worked on with Jeff. And then, yeah. And then he, you know, I think he helped us. We really wanted to try and capture live energy in the basic tracks of Not God. And I think Jeff really helped us find, you know, grab the performances that did that. And then, you know, and then he loves to play and he loves to find cool sounds. And ultimately that is the, I don't know, that's a lot of the pieces that come together.
So he encouraged you guys to stretch out.
Yeah.
Basically. It made you feel comfortable doing it.
Yeah. But also to, you know, like to not overdo a song. Like I think it's so, I mean, you know, Jeff has done this on plenty of records too, where you end up stretching a song into like 7-8 minutes. But I think also sometimes it's like, there's the song. It's 2.5 minutes long. It's great. And it's done. And it says the thing and it feels good. Like Cyclops is a super fast, like in right. out song. Yeah, it was great to have, you know, it's always great to work with people that, you know, like want the best for you. Cause like, you know, sometimes it's like with anything, right? Like you have friends that like you share good news with them and they're like, yeah, they're shouting it from the rooftops. They're excited. And then sometimes you have friends who you share good news and they're kind of like salty about your good news.
They're like, oh, I'm competitive with that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you want to make records with people that are like wanting you to succeed. And
which seems so basic, and yet that's actually a big, true, essential thing in life.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems basic, but you know, it's still something you have to make sure, like.
Absolutely. How did you meet him originally?
Oh, I grew up in the same neighborhood where him and his family lived, and went to grade school with Spencer. Though I'm like, you know, I'm 6 years older than Spencer or something like that. So
you just knew them. It wasn't like, you know, he came to see you perform in a class or something.
No, we just knew them. And then Liam and my brother were really close for a while. I know Jeff did see me when I played and was starting to write songs in high school, but yeah, we just knew them. And then, in 2015, I think he invited me to come sing. This was right when he started the Tweety Band, which was about 10 years ago, because they just celebrated the 10th anniversary of Suki Rae. He invited me to come sing with them at the Metro. And actually, it's a fun story. Or no, at the Vic. And so I went and sang, and I guess it went well. And then the next night I came back and he was like, do you want to get in the bus tonight and come on tour with us for 3 weeks? And I was like,
wow.
Yeah. It was literally like that. Like, and so I packed a bag. I ran home, packed a bag, and came back right before the bus pulled away. And I woke up the next morning, parked outside of First Avenue in Minneapolis. And that was my first bus tour.
Wow.
And it was really cool.
I don't know if it would have been the same tour, but I remember seeing the Tweety Band at Canal Shores in the Out of Space outside thing in Evanston on the golf course.
Uh-huh.
And Ohm opened for them. And then you were also in the band, as I recall.
Yeah. We did doubleheader.
No, that was like 2019, I would guess.
That was 2018.
18.
Because
okay.
We left directly from that show to drive up to the Post Farm and record Fantasize Your Ghost.
Okay.
Yeah, we went straight from that show to
nice.
Making that record.
All right. So I do have to ask the band name question, by the way. So you were Ohm and then had to become Phenome. What was the idea originally behind Ohm, and then just to get it out of the, what happened?
Yeah. Ohm, you know, I think originally I think for a minute we were gonna call ourselves Men or the Men, but that was taken. So then we were HOMME, which is man in French. And then we had to change that to OHMME. Yeah. I mean, I think originally we kind of thought it would be, there's a lot of rock bands that are named after women or girls or female body parts that, and they have no women or non-binary folks in the band. So I think that was a little bit of like us thumbing our nose at that phenomenon. It was like, all right, let's just be men or guys or something, you know, like, but yeah, I'll be honest. Band names have become like one of my least favorite parts of making music and being a band. We had a cease and desist with Ohm in, I don't know, 2020 or 21 or something. And
from whom?
This French DJ duo. So.
And was it spelled the same way?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Because it's such an unusual band name.
Go into like.
If you don't have to. But no, it's just like, because it was such an unusual band name. And then it was like,
I know.
That's the band name?
No.
Like there are 15 different Nirvanas, but that's the band name that they're actually.
Well, and now it's funny because there's a band staying at my house right now who just popped in to drop off sheets named Blood. And I was like, how did you guys figure that out. And they were like, you can't trademark the name Blood. And I was like, oh, well, so maybe we should have just been like, you know, light bulb, and then we wouldn't have had an issue. And then also people could pronounce it. So I don't know, you know, band names are really hard. We didn't want to change our band name, but we had to. And I think, you know, ultimately we really were like, well, we want to keep going with this project and whatever. A name is a name. If people care about the music and care about us, then they'll track it. But it was a bummer, total bummer. And yeah. I still feel like we claim, like I still, it's still, people still call us that. And I'm like, yep, that's right. We're Ohm, we're Phenom, we're all of those things.
Did you pronounce it Phenom and not Phenom? Or you were kind of going with both in this conversation, I noticed.
It's fun. Phenom is fine. Phenom is fine.
But yeah. it was a way of sort of keeping the Ohm there. But yeah.
I think like we also liked that it was kind of like fiend, like end of Ohm. So Phenom.
And also you're a Phenom.
And also we're a Phenom.
So yeah. There you go.
So
you also made reference earlier to you and Macy, like, oh, we played with Chance, who of course is Chance the rapper. Like mm-hmm. how did that happen? Like you're just sort of dropping that in.
You know, Chicago kids.
Right.
Chicago kids, and there was this like, there's like a really strong cohort. It's still going on now. Like, obviously, there's such an incredible generation, young generation of artists, Freako, Free Range, and Neptune's Core, like all these bands, and on and on and on. But we were really lucky to be part of this. I feel like it was like from around my age to around Macy's age of like these super, super dedicated musicians in Chicago, teenager musicians. So we all kind of knew each other, like the ones that really were doing it really in, you know, seriously and intensely. There was this Gallery 37 programs that were going on back then that like really supported kids who wanted to be playing, you know, either jazz or rock music at kind of like a higher, more advanced level. So I was just kind of part of the, and you know, there was the Old Town School Folk Music open mic, and there were just ways for young people to be really playing in bands and kind of developing this across the city music scene. So, you know, Chance was part of that in high school and, you know, beyond when we all started playing like real professional shows. And yeah, I mean, we were just, you know, me and Macy knew how to do backup singing and how to harmonize. And so it was really fun. And yeah, I mean, we were all like so well-versed in different genres of music that like, it felt like very natural and organic.
How big a part is community in what you do? It seems like it's a big part.
I mean, everything. I think I don't know if there's anywhere in the world that kind of has what Chicago has going on. And I often like say that I think it is, it's kind of how, it's because of how our city is laid out in some ways. Like Chicago is like a big metropolis that like attracts people from all over to move to it. Right. But it's also like a relatively affordable city. Obviously it becomes less so all the time, but it's a relatively affordable city. So there's like people who are living here. There's multiple generations of artists. Like obviously I'm part of that. Like me and Macy both are children of artists that decided to live here and raise their family here. And then, you know, then there's all these other people that come here for school or just because they want to move to a bigger city. And people can live here for a really long time. I think like, whereas sometimes it feels like there's kind of like, you have like a window when you can try and make New York City work for you, right? Like there's only, maybe you have like 5 years in you when you can pay that kind of rent and kind of live that kind of life. Or Los Angeles, you know, both of these are obviously big industry towns, but have so much turnover, have so much change of scene. real estate is crazy. So their venues are always changing, and their venues are also always like, and there's just not like this like network. Like Chicago are independent venues. I just wrote an essay about this actually, about how I think that our venues are our community senators, or there are churches. I mean, we all like just show up at venues, shows, and we see each other. We don't need to necessarily text each other and know like, are you going to be there? It's like, just go out to where the live music is happening, and that is where the community will be. And you don't need to overthink it. You just need to go be a part of it. And like that is a Chicago thing. And that is because our city, you know, tries to stay affordable, and because we protect our independent venues, and we should continue to do so. And we, you know, ideally all of that swings back and protects our independent artists. Right. Obviously there needs to be, you know, more and more and more of that. To be honest, like the whole indie music scene is suffering right now. Like, you know, there's some of my friends' bands are doing so great and are selling out venue after venue, but a lot of really incredible bands, like there is just sort of like this dwindling of people wanting to buy tickets or wanting to go out to live shows. And that is painful, because that's, you know, that's where the community exists. So to see some of like the infrastructure that supports that dissolve is, you know, is a challenge, because we obviously need to like figure out accessibility and how to make it all feel more like it can go on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, during the pandemic, it seemed like the city, like the club owners and the musicians really did come together in a way that was striking, you know, just in terms of just the amount people were doing to make sure that those places were supported. And, and yeah, it's true. They're like clubs that just nurture people, you know, whether it's like a bigger club like Metro with Joe Shanahan, or the Hideout with, you know, Tim and Katie Tutton, or, you know, Constellation, which I think you and I talked about for Chicago Magazine a few years ago. Or Sue Miller Tweedy had a pretty awesome club, Lounge Axe, which I spent a lot of time at. And there's still, you know, a diaspora for that. It's true. It's like, if I'm going to go to a, you know, in Evanston, I go up to Space, and you know, I don't have to like always ask a friend if they want to go see a concert, 'cause I'm like, I'll know people at that one, because it's just going to be that community. It's going to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's like the most important thing. And, you know, in Chicago too, I've always, you know, I've worked at venues. I worked at Constellation, and I helped Mike Reed open it. And, you know, Hungry Brain is sort of like my, you know, one of my home turf venues. And I've done tons of stuff at a lot of different venues in Chicago, but those two are very like, you know, close to me. But it's also about curation, right? Like I always felt this about the Hideout, is like, it kind of doesn't matter. Like, you don't need to look at what's playing, just go. Like, and I think that venues should, ultimately, I think that if people really want to like be out in the community or see people or support music, it's like, find the curators that you like find the, you know, the venues that you like, who's doing the talent buying, and just go, you know, like just say, I'm going to go to four or five, you know, I'm going to go to four shows a month, or I'm going to go to two shows a month or something, you know, and just make that part of your routine of discovery. Because there's so many incredible artists like doing great things, and you don't have to stay for all three bands. I mean, of course it's nice to, but you know, just go out and catch a set.
Right.
It's a great way to feel like connected, like you're supporting something good. And yeah, I don't know, if you're feeling like you don't know how to like get yourself out of your house, or you don't know how to like make the first steps towards like finding community again, it's like, just go to a show. That's what they're there for. You don't actually even have to talk at a show. That's the whole point.
Right. And we prefer if you didn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You played with other artists. You played with Iron, and you sang with Iron and Wine. You're on the Richard Thompson record still. Like, what do you learn from those experiences of playing with other bands? Also, you know, Tweedy, obviously.
Mm-hmm. I think that like the thing that I feel the most is that it's like all in service of the song. You know, I believe so much in good songs and good songwriting. And yeah, like in, if I go into any session, it's like trying to leave, you know, I come with the tools and my experience and, you know, my voice and what I can do. But I've also just like learned that it's like, how can what I do make this song better? And I think like that kind of approach sort of like helps me not be a chameleon, but kind of like morph into whatever shape, you know, that the structure of what we're trying to record, what we're trying to capture, live on stage too. You know, it's like, there's some bands where like, you know, I kind of want to just like sort of blend into the background. And then there's some bands where I'm like, you know what, I want to be like more of a dynamic presence on stage here. And, or there's some performances where, you know, I'm like, no, actually I'm going to like let the full spectrum of my personality just exist here on stage. And, you know, I think the audience, this audience feels ready to like drink in whatever I'm here to like bring to them. So,
right. I just think Richard Thompson is so amazing just in terms of a songwriter, but also a, you know, guitarist, and his singing's good too. But being in those sessions, did you get anything out of sort of observing that up close? Or were you sort of, did you sort of come in later to do your vocals?
Yeah, we came in later. Jeff brought us in because he wanted, he was like, I got some blood harmony, Richard. But I think he also knew that Richard Thompson was such an important musical character in our family's life. Richard Thompson is definitely in my dad's like top three. And we grew up singing Richard Thompson, listening to Richard Thompson records. My dad and mom sing Richard Thompson songs together.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, I don't know. That was, that being part of that session was just a, that was just a gift from Jeff to us. But also I think he really wanted, me and Liam both have these kind of like really like sort of rich bellow, like we have these big loud voices. So I think he just wanted some of that on the record. And to hear how our, you know, the blood voices would mix together. It was so cool and so special and obviously just like a really cool thing to share with our dad in particular, who, yeah, I mean, I think Bright Lights is maybe one of the first, also one of the earliest songs that I ever performed live for.
I want to see the Bright Lights tonight.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like, it's deceptively upbeat, not upbeat. So.
Yeah. And also how it's got that like halftime, like the
right.
It's such a great song. Yeah.
I would love to hear you singing that. That would be great.
So, well, maybe I'll cover it.
I'll shout it out for you at, at some maybe show. If when someone yells it in the audience, they'll be like, ah, it's Mark. Damn it. when you and Macy are playing guitars, do you see the interplay similar to the way that you see the interplay of your voices?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think especially now for a lot of Phenom Ohm, we didn't have a bass, and you know, Macy always plays with this like split Substack, so she can kind of like cover bass and vocals. But now we actually also play with a bass player. Our friend Vivi Lightbody plays bass with us. And so even more so, me and Macy can like turn towards each other and like play. And obviously like back and forth has been a huge part. Like, you know, everyone's, if you've heard our band, you've heard us do the
right.
You know, like back and forth.
Which is so much fun. I love it.
But we do that kind of stuff with our guitar a lot too. Or like, you know, one of us is like really sinking deep, deep, deep into like a really noisy solo, and the other one is just like grooving. But I think we definitely, Phenom is about the interplay of our voices and our guitar. And then, you know, obviously using whatever incredible rhythm section we're playing with, whether it's Matt Carroll or Spencer Tweedy or Vivi and all the other incredible drummers we've played with over the years, as like just a springboard for us to like jump up and down on. So
yeah. Are you guys still doing these shows with Spencer?
Spencer's going to play he's playing the Metro with us, and he's playing all of our November shows with us. We're playing with our friend Emerson Huntley from Moontype, who's opening for us in October. And, we are lucky enough. Chicago has a lot of great drummers that
it's true
that we love and they love us. So
there you go. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. That's all for episode 154 of Carol Pop. Thanks so much to Seema Cunningham for inviting us in to hear about her collaboration with Macy Stewart and Phenome, her solo work, and more. Phenome will play its big album release concert for Not God Saturday, November 2nd at Metro Chicago. Tickets are available at metrochicago.com. Tour dates follow in Detroit, Toronto, Montreal, Burlington, Vermont, Somerville and North Adams, Massachusetts, Philadelphia, Brooklyn, and Pittsburgh. Get more information at phenomemusic.com, where you also can buy the band's three albums and watch the four Not God videos. Learn more about solo Seema Cunningham at seemacunningham.com, and you can buy High Roller there and on her Bandcamp page. Her High Roller release show is December 13th at Constellation in Chicago, with more dates scheduled for the new year. You could find Seema Cunningham on Instagram as well. And Nora O'Connor, Kelly Hogan, and Cunningham will apply their formidable singing chops and harmonies to the songs of the Roaches, November 24th at Chicago's Old Town School of Folk Music. Carol Pop is produced by Chris Swake, whose work is phenomenal. If you've gotten this far, you must like Carol Pop, right? For a mere $24, you can become a Carol Pop friend and help keep this thing going. Please contribute at carolpop.com. We appreciate you all. I'm Mark Carroll. Please follow Carol Pop on Twitter, X, and Instagram at Carol Popcast. You can follow me as well at Mark Carroll, at MarkCarro. Please share this episode, subscribe, tell your friends, and tune in again next week for another Carol Pop conversation. Thanks.